Hey guys, this week's episode of A Glass for Every Palate comes with a special gift. Right now, for my listeners, we are offering a 50% off discount on your annual subscription to Somm TV. So go to SommTV.com right now, sign up for an annual membership, use code, wait for it, Shakera, S-H-A-K-E-R-A, for 50% off your annual subscription. That way you won't miss any episodes of any of the amazing shows, including mine, on the Somm TV streaming platform. Go sign up now. What's up, guys? Welcome to this week's episode of A Glass for Every Palate. Listen, I'm just going to say that this season is crushing, right? So, all right, so boom. I'm going to say the most Bronx statement ever to start this. So, today's guest, right? I thought about many words for the theme of our conversation, and I ended with rebel, because I am here for disruptors. So it was rebel disruptors what we're gonna go with. So our guest today, our esteemed guest today, worked in luxury wine for years and did it very well, as we tend to do when we enter spaces, and then decided like, no, I'm gonna do this my way and I'm gonna do it myself. And I'm going to center the essence of what I enjoy out of it. Created Le Fête du Rosé. Now there's Le Fête du Blanc, and has just disrupted the shit out of the wine world. Today's guest, if you haven't figured it out yet, is Donnay Bernstein, founder, CEO, and mogul of the Le Fête Empire. What's up?
What's up? What's up, Shakar? How are you?
I am very, very excited to have this conversation today.
I'm excited to talk to you as well.
This is another one, guys. Sometimes I give everybody a heads up. If you listen to this in the car and you've got children that aren't used to hearing four-letter words, maybe you don't listen to this one with them around, right? This is one of those, but we're going to have a good time. So, Donnay, like, let's jump into this. So, I'm gonna give everybody some context, right? So, I am notoriously particular for looking at tech sheets and understanding where a wine is coming from so that I can have a frame of reference for what I should expect, right? Mm-hmm. And when I first tried Le Fête, I wasn't obsessed. And mm-hmm. I love my rosé.
That's fair.
But what I loved about you was, I forget which live it was on, where you were like, yo, if you don't like it, cool, tell me. I don't need you all to like it, but I need you to not talk the shit behind my back. I need you to tell me what it is that you don't love about it. And I was fair in my critique. Like, I think that there are ageable rosés. I think that there are vintages of particular rosés that mm-hmm. are ageable, I think, right? And we had this dope conversation. But I love people with strong personalities that are still receptive to feedback, because I think that's how we learn and how we grow.
Absolutely.
So from that moment forward, I was like, okay. Then I tasted the new vintage of it. I was like, oh, okay. Well, here we are. We have arrived in style. This is a quaffable rosé. Beautiful color. And there's just this essence of, you guys can't see me, but you know how animated I am. It's hubris. Like, it was just energy in a bottle. And I was like, boom, this is somebody that the work ethic of you mm-hmm. shows through all parts of your business, right? Because you've grown it, you've gotten investments, you've taken feedback, and now, shit, my fridge can't exist without Le Fête. So kudos to you for that. Seriously.
No, thank you so much. And I really meant what I said on that live that day. I mean, I think that's an important part of, you know, growing as a business, an important part of our culture in wine is like, tell each other what we can do better, how we can improve, what you don't like. I'd have been a fool to sit back and say, I made the greatest rosé ever out the park. No, I knew it wasn't the best, but I'm striving to make Le Fête the absolute best. So I appreciate all of you guys for giving me your constructive criticism and being honest.
The unique thing about rosé is I'm somebody that loves it. I think mm-hmm. that you should drink it year round. I think it's a wonderful style of wine, but it is actually something that is extremely subjective.
Yes.
Like, I know people that say, I don't like a rosé at all. And I'm like, mm-hmm. But if I blindfolded you and gave you 3 glasses of wine, I'm not convinced that you'd actually know which one was rosé, right? 100%. And so I like tasting a broad spectrum of rosés. I think some rosés are just refreshing and enjoyable. I think some of them are much bigger and are really like stand up well with food and stuff like that. But I think there's a place for all of them. And I think it's important for people to understand, like, listen, I always say it like, my word ain't gospel.
You're one of the few that believes that, though. So that's the thing.
I don't like turkey sandwiches, for God's sake. Don't listen to me on everything. There's some things that I know, but it's just like a critic for anything else, right? Like if we were talking fashion, there are some designers that you love that evoke your style and you rock with those designers.
100%.
There are others where there's nothing wrong with their clothes. Their talent is there. It's just not your flow. And I wish that people would take more of an approach to that with wine. So with that said, let's get into the why first.
Okay.
Like, you worked with these luxury brands. You've been around the world, very well traveled. Do tell how it dawns on you of, you know what, this isn't so hard. I can do this myself.
It was actually me talking shit at a cocktail party. Being the person I am, I would walk up and talk to anybody. And I started talking to a gentleman randomly. And he told me, oh, I own the winery and blah, blah, blah. And of course, I was like, oh, we should do something together. But that was just me talking shit at that moment. And then when he started to really engage with me in that conversation, I was like, oh, this is like going in a great direction. Mm-hmm. So when I got back home and thought about who I had just met in the conversation we had. At the time, I was at Ace, but prior to that, I had worked on Moët de Chandon and Dom Pérignon. So I knew what percentage of the business for rosé was consumed by people of color. Mm. So automatically, my wheels started churning. And I said, hey, listen, if I could take 10% of the sparkling rosé consumers and bring them over to a still rosé on a cool-ass brand that has edge and is connected to the culture, I could be a rich man. And that's literally how it all went down.
You better come on with data-driven decision making. So much of that, though. It's interesting that you give us that, because I do believe there's so much of life and the opportunities that you fall forward or backwards into is on charisma. Literally, this podcast is this because my hair caught on fire somewhere. And I didn't freak out. And the right person noticed that I handled it with some poise. And here we are in season two. So now we have this great conversation. Mm-hmm. I can be rich off of this. Mm-hmm. There's still a long line between there, because the three-tier system of wine is probably the largest barrier for people that don't have generational winemaking in their families, in, you know, places.
Absolutely.
That's probably the largest barrier, is that even with a lot of money, you still need a lot of relationships and long-term investiture.
Absolutely.
So talk to us a little bit about how you used your own savvy to go, okay, if I'm going to do this, I'm also going to need some other expertise in here. So how did you kind of create the team to bring this to fruition?
First and foremost, you mentioned relationships. The relationships I had built over the last 16 years in the business were crucial because when I first created this product, I didn't have a three-tier distribution system. I had the independent guys like the Park Streets and the MHWs of the world. But I turned to people I had worked with significantly from my Moët Hennessy and Ace days. It was like, listen, I have this new product. I've supported you. Now, and it was, you know, as simple as that. So that really helped me get going to the point where I could, you know, get some money coming in for what I'd already spent to produce the product. But then in terms of building out the team, I wanted to, you know, that you got to have the expertise and the people who know distributor management and all that good stuff. But I also wanted people who were of the culture and didn't know the wine and spirits industry, because they could bring something else. You know, I've been in there so long that I'm kind of regimented in how I think about it. So I needed someone to come in and be like, oh, you're operating just like everybody else. You need to say middle finger to that. Let's do it like the fashion brands do it, or let's do it like the beauty brands do it. So when I was building the team, I really looked at that. So I built, you know, my COO. We worked together at Moët Hennessy in Miami. He knows everything about operations and, you know, corporate sales and all that sort of thing. Other individuals like Kelly, who's on my team, is much more the culture-driven marketing fly guy sort of thing.
Yeah.
You got to have that. And then I have some others who are like hardcore liquor industry guys, but have worked across the gamut of spirits and wine in different markets. So it was really about, you know, creating a great team of all different sort of personalities and backgrounds, so I didn't get stuck in traditional winemaking, wine marketing, sort of liquor industry business.
I think it's a challenge sometimes to see what you know is there and then take that walk. And I think that it's an interesting time to be in wine and spirits and hospitality, because there are some things that you look at like, you're not doing that right at all.
Right.
Like that... Somebody's going to get mad at me if you think I'm subbing you. I assure you I'm not, but somebody isn't going to like that statement.
Yeah.
But there are some people where I feel like, you know, like there is a difference between organically engaging a zeitgeist and a culture. And then there's pandering, right?
Yeah.
And I think that when it comes to all of the subgroups, all of the groups that haven't been traditionally associated with wine, so basically everyone that's not an older white man, there's been clear examples of like,
pandering. Mm-hmm. And there's been other examples of like, well, this is just a good wine. Like, yeah. I can tell you all the things about it, but if this is what you do, if this is how your weekends look, if this is your lifestyle, I've created a product that you'd enjoy. And it's very difficult, I think, across the board in culture to get the powers that be to understand the value and market power that those subsets have. And so I'd love for you to talk to us a little bit about, let's talk about the, like, y'all can't see me doing the make it rain thing, but this man has gotten invested. Like, this is a masterclass in how to have a good idea, grow it, and then get other people's coin to grow your shit into something great. Talk to us a little bit about how you positioned your brand and helped other people understand, like, yo, this is an untapped goldmine that if we just get the right product, we invest in making a quality product, the people will come and they will spend coin on it.
Yeah. I mean, it really started for me because, as you mentioned, I was an avid traveler and I used to just run around the world like every summer, like Ibiza here, tat, Greece, whatever. It didn't matter. And this is before Instagram and everybody was posting about it.
Remember that? Remember when you could do shit and it happened even if it was on the gram?
So I was running around the world and I just realized there was this culture of luxury travel amongst me and my friends. And everyone came to us and said, where should we go next? Or heard you was there. What do you think? Blah, blah, blah. And what I saw is that this group, this small group that was running around the world together, we all knew each other. We were all connected. We were all of the culture and all of cool. So that was really the basis for what La Fête was. So La Fête's a party and everyone's invited. We really wanted to create those moments where you're sitting around a table and you have an older 60-year-old white gentleman and you have your Asian friend, your Hispanic friend, and y'all all just vibing. Is not about what color are you and, you know, all that sort of stuff like that. So that was the genesis of La Fête. It's like, we're going to create this brand that's really going to be all inclusive, but cool and based upon the thirst for life. So whether that's travel, food, et cetera. And that's really how we built the brand and what we use as the baseline for everything we were doing. So when I was talking to even distributors and accounts and all that, none of them got that in the very beginning. They're like, what are you talking about? I'm like, listen, there's a whole set of people who drink rosé and think like me and no one else is talking to them.
Yep.
And they're like, oh, well, we in the Hamptons. I'm like, but are you in the cool part of the Hamptons?
You in Sag Harbor?
Right, you're in Sag Harbor. Right. You know, so it was all of those sorts of things. So it was just a lot of convincing. And I think the data from our last 2 years showed that. They just started believing really this year in 2020. Last year was still like, oh, it's cute, Black Lives Matter sort of thing. Boom, boom, boom. Now you can go to a lot of these other rosé brands' Instagram page and you're seeing people of color and you're seeing them showing diverse audiences and all that. So we know we're doing something right and kicking down that door. And I think our investor in Constellation recognized that early on and said, listen, you guys are tapping into a luxury consumer, but a multicultural luxury consumer, not just Black, but multicultural luxury consumer.
We're going to applaud the fact that you got Constellation coins now. Like, let's talk about that. But it's such an interesting thing. It's like, you know, there's this concept now and this thing of like normalizing Black luxury. I'm like, well, if it's normal, it doesn't need to be named, right? Because like you said, there are people that look like us and that aren't us, right? Yeah. That are just younger Asians, younger Hispanic people, younger Latinx people that have just worked hard, made some coin, and live a good life that makes them happy. You know, now that we're in the realm of Instagram, that's something I struggle with a lot. It's like,
you be living it up on Instagram. I'm not.
But you know, the crazy shit is like, yo, it's not even a humble flex. Like, I've legit been doing this for a long time. Like, this was my chosen vice.
Yeah.
That's the line that we towed. You know what I mean? Where it's like, I want you to understand that people like making money.
Yeah.
Racist like making money.
Yeah.
And quite honestly, I don't give a shit if you're racist if you're giving me money. Like, if you're giving me money, like, you can sit comfortably and enjoy me use your money to further my culture and my 100%. Community. Like, I'm completely cool with that. But I have not known anyone racist enough to walk away from money.
No.
Right? And I think that especially in wine, which is what I try to do, is like, listen, there's a lot to know about wine if you care to know it. But for the vast majority of people that I know, we know a lot of the same people, which we'll get to how your network equals your net worth in a minute. But the majority of people that I know are professionals doing well in life.
Mm-hmm.
They have X amount of expendable income, race and gender aside.
Yep.
Like, we all now, like, I'm low key washed. I'm not even going to front about it. Like, I'm not going to nobody's club unless I have a table to sit down. Right? Like, I like going out to dinner and drinking wine. I like renting luxury homes with friends and drinking wine. Like, that's my flow these days. And so I feel like price isn't the issue. This isn't about money. If you make a good product, you can price it under $30. That just means that people will buy a case instead of two bottles. You know what I mean? And so I think that it's so dope to watch what you've done, because you've actually pulled the curtain back, like, y'all are leaving money on the table.
Yeah.
But you also won't get access to this money if you don't go through me.
Right. I mean, listen, I wanted to definitely be a disruptor. One thing I will say is working for, as we call him, Mr. Carter, Ace of Spades, everything was very like, fuck the champagne industry. It was, you know, we're going to thumb our noses to you and do things our way. And granted, listen, there were some pros and cons to that. But what I saw is that you can really disrupt an old industry if you get the culture and the community behind you. And that was the same way I wanted to do with Lafette. I mean, even when I came out, it was the whole like, is it going to be sweet because it's dark in color and all that shit like that? And what are your ratings say? I just bypassed all of that. I was like, listen, I'm not coming to the game to be asking for everyone's approval with these ratings and all that. Those are nice. But for me, if the customer likes it, then we're good. And I'll come back around to you guys later. You know, people were caught off guard by that. But, you know, I knew where we wanted to go. I know we all like Nobu and Liberta Dan and all that. So I went straight to them to try to get by the glass placements. I'm like, listen, this is where we like to go. You're missing all of us that want to come to your restaurants and drink a great rosé. And a lot of them's like, you know what? You're right.
That part. And it's dope that you brought that up, because like my DMs are a myriad of questions. But a lot of times it's people that are quite honest. Like, look, I want to go to that restaurant because you made it look real good. But if I'm going to go there, like I have limited coins, right? If I'm going to pay that for the meal, I can't go that far and wide.
Right.
And my answer is always, if you're at a quality place, you should be able to order the cheapest bottle of wine. Yeah. You should be comfortable saying to the sommelier, listen, I don't know nothing about wine,
right,
but this is an occasion that I've saved up for, that I've treated myself to enjoy this. I want the best bottle of wine that you have at the lowest price you have that will complement my meal.
There it is.
You should be able to do that.
Yep.
And traditionally, right, we have wines on very extensive menus that meet that, right? They're from the Finger Lakes.
Yep.
They're Gewürztraminer. They're Grüner Veltliner. Those are not expensive wines. They're wines from Portugal. They're wines from Spain.
Mm-hmm.
So what would be the difference if we created another brand in there?
Exactly.
Where now that there's a consciousness to support Black brands and minority-owned brands, I believe in that completely.
Yep.
Except, caveat, asterisk, I work for my money.
Oh, yeah.
So I want quality if I'm spending my money. And I will be intentional about that. And I think that without shading, please don't DM me this shit. Like, I'm not shading anyone. But I think that you have trusted yourself, bet on yourself, listened to the market, and shown a level of agility that other brands would greatly benefit from if they did exactly what you did. But I also don't think everyone can, because I think there's some magic in what you do.
I think you and I are the same. I'm a bougie person, or bourgeoisie, or however you want to say it. Like, so at the end of the day, I'm just like you. Like, if I don't like it, I don't like it. And I don't care who owns it. And I had that always in the back of my head. So I always wanted to do things as best as I could, because I am that person. Like, I can't be, you know, out here talking shit about everybody else. And then I'm like, oh, please drink this.
Then we're Sha'Carri Richardson.
Yeah.
Can't be last if you're talking shit.
I think it's hard, though, because I think a lot of people got caught up or are caught up on the fact that they have a Black-owned brand and that's all that matters to them, right?
Yes.
And that's not what all that mattered to me. My goal from day one was to be the number one luxury rosé wine in America. First, period.
Come on now.
Across the board.
Period.
So I wasn't caught up on the Black-owned thing. In fact, the first year we only mentioned it probably a couple of times, not because we were hiding it, because we didn't want that to be the point for people to judge us on first.
Right.
So, you know, a lot of people got to shake it up. The year of last year is over. What's your messaging point now?
What is it now?
Yeah.
That is something that we have to be honest about, right? Like, I don't buy things specifically because they're made by a woman.
Right.
Now, if you give me two options, right, and they're both good, I'm going to go with the group that I associate with. If it's a woman-owned thing and it's quality, I'm here for it. If it's a Black-owned thing and it's quality, I'm here for it. But I don't conflate those two things. And I think that that's important to mention, because truthfully, some of us get flack for that. You know, like I am very transparent. I love rosé. I'm a year-round rosé drinker. But I also think that every rosé has its place.
For sure.
I've done 50 million shows on just rosé on Somm TV for a reason. Yep. But I do know that when people walk into a wine shop anytime from like April to now, what they see when they walk in is a sea of pink.
Yep.
And if you don't know what you're drinking, you're a human.
Yep.
What bottle looks good to you? What bottle has the highest rating? I'm always like, yo, do you like the person that rated that wine? You know what I've never done? Rated a wine. I'm data driven. I can't tell you what would make me give a wine a 92 or a 93. I don't know how to qualify that. So I would never say that. What I love about your brand is like, look, this is a rosé. Mm-hmm. I put my name behind quality. I think it's good. Yeah. You should buy it.
Yeah.
I think that Lafite, particularly this vintage, I think it's priced well.
Yes.
I think it drinks well. I think it's food friendly without being too austere.
Yep.
Use that word.
I like that.
And I think it's just fucking enjoyable. And yep. I think that that's what people should be looking for in a rosé. Now, somebody says, well, if there's 10 other rosés for under $15, why should I pay $20, $25 for this one? The answer to that is very simple. If you only want to spend $15, spend $15.
$15.
I don't know what you want me to tell you. Like, I'm not going to convince you to spend more money than you want to do.
Yeah.
If you want to buy rosés under $15, these are the ones I would drink if I didn't want to spend any more than $15. If I was having a party with people that don't give a shit about wine, or I was going to pour this into sangria, or I was going to make rosé, $15 rosé it is, right? Or you can drink really good ones from Spain or Portugal. No problem.
Right.
And I love that about you, is that you're not trying to, like, I'm not trying to convince you to like my wine.
No, not at all. I'm over that. Why? I would spend too much time and focus away from the stuff that's really important. And me trying to convince somebody is not.
It's swag for me.
People write us comments and be like, oh, I didn't like it. I'm like, well, wine is like music. It's subjective. And I do a Jay-Z line. Everything ain't for everybody. And they're just like, oh, you're right. I'm like,
oh, you not feeling me? Fine. It costs you nothing. Pay me no mind. Like, you ain't got to like this podcast. You don't got to like nothing about me.
Nothing.
There are a billion other people that you can follow.
Yeah.
And I think that walking in confidence, because I don't think that people realize, like, there's a level of fear in that, right? Right? Like,
oh, yeah.
You want to be successful. You
100%.
Need people to want to engage. But I think that the most relatable thing about you, I think we're very similar in a lot of ways, and that's why we have a lot of the same friends. But I think that there's such value in receiving that part of it. It's like, I have no intentions of everyone liking me.
Right.
I'm not designed for everybody. There is someone that listens to me, sees me, is like, I hate this girl. Yo, everything she says irks the shit out of me. Cool!
That's okay.
Same. I literally want to write like, same. I scroll Instagram and I'm like, oh my God. Like, I'm uninterested in so much of it. And that's cool, right? But what I do know, and I think that what I see in Lafite is the same thing. It's like, but I know that what I serve is quality.
Oh, for sure.
If it's not what you want, that's cool. But you ain't gonna make me feel like the product that I'm putting out is less.
Right.
So I love the work. I'll be in Atlanta. This is going to air after I'm already in Atlanta. But for the purposes of this discussion, I'll be in Atlanta next week relative to this conversation.
Okay.
And I think that Atlanta is such a unique market to launch a product like this, where it is exhausting traffic.
Amongst other things.
It is the epicenter. I feel like in the time periods that we're dealing with, it's basically like what Harlem was to Black culture.
Yeah.
And I think that to launch it in a place like this, you know, I know the partnerships with the Gathering Spot and all these things, like country clubs are normal for white people, but somehow when Black people do it, it's like, oh, we like hanging out together too. It's a thing. We like it. We enjoy it like everyone else. So talk to us a little bit about like, how did the Atlanta market receive it first? Like, how did you kind of cultivate this kind of micro environment for your product and then allow it to spread?
I mean, I had a leg up. I went to college here. I went to Clark Atlanta University, went to Clark and then Georgia Tech and then lived here for 12 years after that. So, you know, listen, it was almost like a second home. I probably spent more time in Atlanta than I did back home in Baltimore. And because of that, I knew like all of my friends were here. We were all, to your point, college educated, extra income, had money to burn. So I was like, let me focus here. And with the cultural influence that it's having across the United States and across the world right now, I knew it was important to put my foot down here for the brand. The interesting thing is that because this was such a huge Moet Imperial Nectar Rosé market, there was a lot of confusion about exactly what the brand was.
Okay.
And that's been one of the biggest hurdles we've had. You know, you say rosé and people automatically think Bel Air, Moet Nectar Rosé. I won't tell anybody.
They can't see what I just did.
Thank God.
Real talk, my audience knows enough to know exactly how I just reacted to that. No tea, no shade, but no thank you.
Yeah, so a lot of people thought when, you know, Let Fat came out, it was going to be that. You know, they brought out the champagne flutes and they wanted to stand on sofas with it in nightclubs and all, like, you know, the good stuff that happens with champagne. And we immediately said, hold on, let's start educating the consumer on the rosé category, both still and sparkling, what the difference is, et cetera, et cetera. So it's been a fun ride in that standpoint that we've seen the consumer marketplace grow for still rosé, but it was challenging. So it was one of those things where it was like, okay, I got to still build Miami because that's a rosé market while trying to grow Atlanta. And, you know, 2 years later, we're starting to see it pay off. But at first it was like, okay, I'm giving up. I'm getting the hell out of here. I'm going to go sell some wine where people understand it. But it's growing. It's happening.
And that's super dope. I want to ask you, I mean, you are quite outspoken and what's been the most frustrating part of all of this?
Oh, you're not going to do this to me.
I am. I need to know. Like, listen, we got to be transparent about this stuff because I think wine is a product that's easily romanticized, right? It all looks amazing. At the Somme TV network, like, we literally make wine look as, and it is beautiful. We make the shit look as beautiful as humanly possible. But there's a lot of it that isn't pretty at all.
Yeah.
So I think that, you know, a lot of people see wine as like an opportunity, like, oh shit, I got some extra money. I'm gonna buy it. I'm gonna slap a label on it and boom. Oof,
don't do that.
Quickest way to break. What has been the most challenging and frustrating part of this whole thing? Given all your experience, there's still parts of it that I'm sure suck.
Yeah, I think for me is really trying to get the American consumer and buyers outside of the major metropolitans to understand that rosé is a category. You will go to restaurants and they will put one rosé from Pot John Fuck Tennessee on the list. And you're like, oh, we have a rosé. And you're like, all right, but dude, one, you have four Chardonnays and you have two Sauvignon Blancs and a bunch of reds and you get the rosé and you put one and then you put this esoteric bullshit on there, excuse my language, that's going to do nothing for you or the category.
Yeah.
Like I tell everyone, like, listen, I'm not upset at Whispered Angel. They are good for us. They open doors for us. We can come behind them and show people the difference between rosés. So I think just the understanding of what rosé is, whether it be a black restaurant, a white restaurant, in Tennessee, or it's really been that. That's the most challenging thing is like, not all rosés are the same. And why do you give such little time and attention to them when it's the fastest growing segment of the wine category? I just don't understand it.
It's literally something that I struggle with too. Like y'all treating rosé like the basic bitch of wine. Like
right.
Rosé,
it's not Zinfandel anymore.
Y'all acting like it's the fashion nova of wine. Like what is happening here? There is very, very good rosé. And also like I've literally challenged people like that. Like, all right, cool. Yeah. I'm going to put three wines in front of you, but you have to commit to me blindfolding you. I don't care what you like or dislike. I'm only going to challenge that I don't think that you are able to tell me which one is rosé. I think that there's levels to this shit. That's absolutely what it comes down to. And I think that that's something that I've had to grow into and understanding. Like, listen, I want to be relatable to everybody. I want you to feel that if you want to learn about wine, you can.
Right.
I want you to feel like if you go into a restaurant, you don't have to know shit about the wine. There's literally a paid professional in there. But you need to be able to give them something.
See, that's the thing, though. Are they cool? Because that's the shit that, excuse my language, that drives
me
nuts.
Stop excusing your language.
They're so pretentious sometimes with such fucking dicks that you're like, I don't even want to talk to you. And that's been the biggest problem with the consumers. You intimidate them to the point that, what's the point? Why?
Yeah. And that's where I challenge people to go, if you're paying your money, like, that's where I draw the line. Like, you're not going to talk crazy to me if I'm spending my money. Like, that is not a thing. So I will gather you all the way together. Like, okay, right. Cool. So you've listed a bunch of producers in a language that I don't understand. What right. I'm trying to tell you, what I need you to get is that I've had a rough week.
Yeah,
and
I got
I'm now
$90.
Here
go find me a bottle.
Trying to spend this coin, right? So your pen is cute, your lapel is cute, but what I'm trying to get to is this is what I'm trying to spend.
Right.
Go back there and come back with something for me. But I do think that wine has been structured in this way, and I think that that's why I relate so much to disruptors.
Yep.
And I've always said that, like, I am the shittiest influencer, but I'll disrupt the ish out of stuff. Like, I'm 5'8". I got a little thickness to me. I've got a blonde fro. But you're not going to tell me nothing about wine or about food. It's impossible.
Right.
You're not going to shame me.
But that's where your authenticity comes through. Because even when you look at your Instagram influencers, everything's so pretty and it's almost like it's not real. Like,
I don't have that.
Yeah, you're like showing them the real.
Like, I wish that I did it. I'm like, in my head, I'm like, oh, maybe I should hire a photographer and do a show.
No,
that sounds
that.
Like money out of my food and wine budget. And
work.
I don't want to spend that. I'm not doing that.
My team screams at me because I won't take pictures. I'm like, it takes too much work for the staging, the this, the that.
It's too much effort. Yeah. It's too much. Literally, the other day I posted a picture that got almost 2,000 likes. It was my friend accidentally catching me walking out of 11 Madison Park. I was shit-faced. That meal was like 5.5 hours. Like, that blur was real.
Yeah.
Right? That's as real as it's going. Yeah. But I want to talk a little bit about, before we step into Le Fête du Blanc, because okay. Let's be transparent. They can't see me, but I've consumed almost the entire bottle of that. But we'll get to that in a second.
That's all right. No judgment.
Oh, please judge me. Like, it is a thing. You can judge me all you want. Judge your mama and me at the same time. It's fine. But I think that it's valuable to talk about, like, how, you know, a lot of people want to box people in, mm-hmm. and like, you got to tone down you if you want to make money. And every live, every conversation that I've seen you in, yo, fam has been dumb animated. Like, I'm like, yo, is he from Baltimore or the Bronx? Because the level of, I don't give a fuck,
yeah.
who receives this the way I give it. This is what I'm serving, like a French chef. By the way, this concept of the customer is always right is very American. Leave the country,
oh, yeah, for sure.
Go to France. In France, it's the opposite. The customer is always wrong. Like, oh, this is not what you ordered? Too fucking bad. Right.
This is the way it is. I don't understand.
This is the way it is. Problem. Fix your mouth. Possible. Like, your mouth is the problem. I don't know what to tell you. This is the food that you're getting. You pay for it either way. Like, there's no sending shit back to the kitchen and getting a new one. It's not a thing.
Yeah.
And I value that in everything that I've seen you speak, and I join all of them, is that there's this authenticity to you that it's like, I mean, I know that I'm going to attract the right amount of people that's going to keep my pockets coming.
Yeah.
You don't like it? It ain't for you. And that's cool. But I want to talk about, like, is that ever a struggle for you? Is that ever something that crosses the back of my mind? Like, shit, maybe I shouldn't have said that. Because I have those moments. Like, shit, maybe
I get phone calls after every one of them from my team, either the PR person or Kelly or somebody is like, yo, why'd you say that? And I'm just like...
Y'all hear my bracelets, so you know exactly what my hand motion is.
But it's who I am. I mean, I've been this way my entire career. I mean, anyone who's worked with me at Moët Hennessy, they'll tell you that. I just say what's on my mind, but not in a rude way. I'm not here to be rude. I'm going to always be the one that tells someone the truth.
Yeah.
Not always deliver it the best way, but it's the truth.
Growth.
Yeah.
Growth. I'm going to promise you this. 39-year-old Shakira delivers things very differently than 29-year-old Shakira delivers things.
100%.
There has been tremendous growth in 10 years of Shakira.
Thank God for email, because I can write them out and then backspace everything.
Cause... Thank you. Because sometimes I'd be writing shit, it'd be a data dump. I'd be like, wait, maybe I don't say that. Like that.
Exactly.
Like that might, because I don't want nothing fucking with my bag. If it fucks with my bag, all right, I might wheel it back. But that growth is evident in your brand. So you guys cannot see me, but right now I am sipping on Le Fête du Blanc. And Le Fête du Blanc is a blend of two grapes that I love that I've featured on Weekly Wines. If you're a Somme TV subscriber, you know that I love easy drinking whites. And this is a blend of Rochle, depending on where you are in the world. It's really Vermentino, right? A Sardinian grape that I absolutely love. And for everyone listening, you know how much I think the grape Semillon is undervalued. Mm-hmm. I like my wines with a little bit of weight, probably because I'm a thick black girl, but whatever. I like shit with a little bit of weight on it. And Le Fête du Blanc is very much the kind of white wine that I will sit and talk with my friends, mm-hmm. and drink the whole bottle easily. Like, I am drinking this. I'm ashamed to say how close we are to finishing the bottle. But this is something I would order by the case. Like, this could easily be my house white. So talk to us a little bit. Like, all right, you've had, mm-hmm. is it two or three vintages of the rosé now?
18, 19, 20. Three vintages.
Three vintages.
Yeah.
And now you've decided, okay, that works. Let's do something else. What took you to Le Fête du Blanc, and how did we get here?
Well, what happened, again, I was traveling back and forth to the winery so much over the years. And whenever I got there, I would just see like these bottles of white wine. I'm like, what is that? They're like, oh, that's just some white wine that we make. I'm like, but tell me more. And they're like, we don't have any. We don't make enough. I'm like, what do you mean you don't make enough? Like, listen, and I've learned a lot in this process as well. All I knew was rosé, and now I understand the region of Provence. And less than 10% of the vineyards are planted with white wine grapes. And traditionally, that's used to help blend in the rosés when there's, you know, some mixing that needs to go on. So I was like, well, listen, I want a white wine. He's like, Donnie, it's just not possible. I'm like, okay, here we go with the French shit. It's not possible.
Yes, it is.
Everything's possible in America.
Shout out to innovation.
Yeah. So we worked on it. So this is something I told them 2 years ago. I was like, listen, I want to do this white wine. I think it's fantastic. I think, you know, the region itself makes a lot of great white wines that don't get the attention that other regions in France get. And they're fantastic, you know, as you can see in this bottle. And I just wanted to bring something different. Chardonnay is Chardonnay and Sauv Blanc is Sauv Blanc. But what about the white blends from the south of France? And I have this love affair with the region. So my whole goal is like, I'm going to make this the flyest fucking region out there. Not just based upon like wine, but just lifestyle in general. So people are like, oh, I'm drinking this white from Saint-Tropez. I'm drinking this red from Saint-Tropez. So with Le Fête de Blanc, I was like, listen, whatever I can get, let's make it a white wine. And we have 6,000 bottles. That's all this year. That's about 1,000 cases for us.
Okay, so I need a couple more bottles.
Yeah.
I need a couple more bottles.
Goes on sale next week. But yeah, 90% roll and 10% Semillon. It's good. I have to say it's good. Like you, I had a whole bottle to myself the other day.
It's delicious. So by the time you guys are listening to this, it'll already be on sale. But I am very much a person. Like, I think that people should find the wines that they like. Mm-hmm. I think you should have a house red, a house white, and a house sparkling, right? I love Chardonnay. I love Riesling. I love the white grapes of Spain. But this absolutely falls into the rotation that I would have as a housewife. I also think that like the challenge that you had, France is one of the most complicated wine regions in the world to understand. Like they are fucking stubborn as hell. They don't want to change anything. But I think that the lower tiered wines, I'm like, that's what the country actually drinks. Right?
Yes.
So the Vin de Pas, all of those wines, if you're in Burgundy, the village level wines are what the vast majority of Burgundy drinks. Vin de Pas in France is what most French people consume. So in America, again, it's this romanticizing of, I only drank Premier Cru, Grand Cru. First of all, if you do, you don't actually taste wine. Let's be very clear.
You're just showing off, as my grandmother would say.
Listen, far be it from me to say sometimes shit's just not a flex.
Yeah.
Sometimes it is, right? My ancestors sometimes tap me on the shoulder like, girl, just go off. Yeah, and I do, right? If you follow me on Instagram, yes, I will admit this. Sometimes shit's just a flex.
Yes.
And it'll be what it'll be, right? But there are other times where like I truly appreciate wine as an artisanal product. Yep. I truly appreciate, much like food culture, right? We are both children of the diaspora. What our culinary thumbprint on the world is that you gave a shit and we made greatness out of it, right? And I 100%. Think that wine is the same. And so if you make a good wine, so Grol is Vermentino. I've featured it many times. It's a Sardinian grape. It's traditionally grown coastally with a lot of influences from the sea. So when you try Le Fête de Blanc, let's go through this. Yeah. I mean, aromatically, it's beautiful. There's citrus, there's white flower. But do you really know what a white flower smells like? I don't know.
No.
I don't think you care. I think that you smell food and it influences what you taste. If it smells good, you like
fruit.
It. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful wine. If you want to get super geeky on it, I get green apple. I get citrus. I get a little bit of Jolly Rancher. There's a slight sweet greenness to it. So a sweet herb like parsley or chervil or something that's a little bit sweet.
But the color is beautiful.
Oh, it's glorious in a glass.
Yeah.
On the palate, you guys know that I'm an acid junkie and that shit hits in a beautiful way.
Yep.
I have consumed almost this entire bottle throughout this podcast because it is a beautiful balance of, and I have no food with me. So, you know, if you're meeting me afterwards, good luck. But it is the right amount of acid where you want more of it, but you don't need food to temper it.
Yep.
However, if you were having this with any seafood dish, any kind of cheese, particularly a soft cheese, would be absolutely delicious. I can sit and eat this with dried fruit. I mean, you want to get super blackety black. Listen, this and a fried whiting sandwich between some wheat bread also flex. IJS, right? Like this is this works in a lot of ways. At 12.5% alcohol, yeah. You don't taste any of that, right? So this is a moderate wine. I think this is just a fucking high quality, easy drinking white wine that steadily be in your rotation. And y'all also know I don't lie about shit. If I don't like it, I tell you I don't like it.
We know you don't lie about it.
I don't lie about it because you know why? Because I feel like if I trust you to tell me about something, like you ever tell somebody to go to a restaurant or you take them to a restaurant and like that one night the food is shitty, you're like, oh damn it.
They never let you live it down either.
Never. Like, oh, fuck these people thinking that you know shit about food and why. Yo, shit, this food is gross. And then I'm low-key like mad salty about it. Like, yo, how y'all gonna let me be out here like this? I applaud your authenticity. I applaud the rebellion. And I'm inspired by
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Sometimes it's a challenge. Like, don't be fooled. Like, sometimes I struggle with, oh, God, Shakira, maybe you don't say that. But if you know me, that's the shit that I would say. So what am I gonna do about this? Like, my friends know me. Like, I'm the friend you don't put on speakerphone without telling me. Like, I might say some crazy shit.
Absolutely
that's
not.
Just the way it goes. Like, you have to know me, right? Like, so guys, before we started recording, Donae gave me my new hashtag. Like, I'm gonna give him credit for it because I'm gonna use the shit out of it. Like, it's from the Bronx to La Bernadette. Like, you never know. Maybe today I'm at the patty shop, tomorrow I'm at La Bernadette. You don't know what you get with me. But I'm going to tell you the real all the time. Like, one of my friends categorized, like, if I were to date the way I eat, I would date everything from, like, a homeless man to a millionaire, right? Because I still like... Yo, I'm from New York. I still like a good street hot dog with ketchup and onion. Now,
I can't with you.
Yeah, I might be walking to per se, but I still like both of them. And I have grown approaching 40 to appreciate the duplicity, the multifaceted.
It's important though. You have to have.
You have to.
You have to have.
And I am truly inspired by your tenacity, by your authenticity, by your commitment to who you are.
Yeah.
And it resonates with me. And certainly with the platforms that I have, I will absolutely promote this brand and promote these wines because I think that they are tremendous.
We're just getting started.
Listen.
We are just getting started.
That's the gag, right? It's like people don't even realize, like, listen, I struggle with imposter syndrome. And I think that's true of like a lot of type A people. Like, people think that you have confidence through the roof. And I do. Outwardly.
Yeah.
Inwardly, I criticize everything. Like, I can't listen
to my
own.
It takes me an hour to send an email.
Yo, I can't listen to my own podcast without another person there because all I would do is criticize. Oh, you breathe too heavy. You said 16 times. You know what I mean? Like, there's this duality to excellence. You resonate so much. Like, everything about you and about how you've built Lafette resonates with me. And there are people, you know, my audience is broad as fuck.
Yeah.
So if you are one of my 60-year-old white men that for some reason really enjoy how I talk about this, listen, if you drink DRC and Rouleau, first of all, invite me over because I also love drinking those things. I'm here for it, right? But I challenge you, like, if you can afford those things, then buying a bottle of a well-made, high-quality wine that is simply just good and enjoyable, I challenge you to stretch your wine palate both ways, right? I think that that's kind of a thing that people fall into is like once you start drinking, I love white Burgundy and champagne. God knows that's the most expensive shit on the earth to drink. Yeah. I don't drink that every day. Like that's the 52 fake out. If y'all think I'm drinking Solos every day, you are mistaken.
Yeah,
I do not. Goals. That is my aspirational goals, right? Where I can just walk to my wine fridge and open Solos every night. But I'm not there yet. And so I challenge my audience, whether you are starting on your wine journey or whether you're a very seasoned drinker, I think that it's important and that your voice and your opinion and your fair critique of wines, particularly at this price
point. Say that word again. Fair critique.
Fair. The data shows us that the majority of this country, the majority of wine consumers don't spend more than $25, $30 max. On wine.
Yes.
So you would be a fool to not calibrate your palate to be able to drink around the world. Anytime I hear somebody say, oh, I don't drink white wine, I don't drink rosé, I go, then I don't trust your wine opinion on anything. I don't care. You could drink wines older than me all day, every day. I do not trust your wine palate if you tell me that you box yourself into one particular thing.
Because there's some amazing wines out here. Like to your point, when you travel around the world and you go to some of these countries, they give you, is their everyday drinking wine that could blow some of these more expensive wines, not out of the park, but can certainly compare and compete with them.
They can blow them out of the park. And that's the thing. I think if you gave a subset of the average consumers DRC, I think those wines are phenomenal. Please do not think that I am telling you, if you have DRC and you want to share it with me, you absolutely should. Please. Like, I love those wines. You guys know this. But I think that there's a spectrum of wine, right? I think that if you're sitting on your couch eating Doritos, do not drink DRC Espresso with it. That's not a thing.
Drink Lafette.
Listen.
I'm a French fry and rosé and Lafette guy all day long.
Listen, the current vintage of Lafette Rosé, there is a place in my neighborhood that makes a bacon gorgonzola burger. Oof. First of all, I won't drink anything but rosé with it, right? And they make this beautiful bacon jam to go on it. Wow. It's a local bar. Like when the world was open, I would go and watch Giants games at this bar. I have drank Lopez de Heredia with that burger. Yeah. I have drank Domaine Out with that burger. I drank Lafette with that burger. Yeah. Rosé and burgers. If you like burgers, stop drinking beer or Pepsi. Yeah. If you drink fucking Pepsi. I love Pepsi, but don't talk to me about wine.
Spoken like still a true Northeasterner, just like Pepsi.
Yo, Pepsi is the shit. I'm not even gonna lie to you. Like, I drink Pepsi with a bacon and cheese. Like, I've been drinking Pepsi with everything. I know it's shit. Don't tell me nothing. Yes,
okay,
I know it's
bad.
Okay,
I won't say anything.
It's absolute trash. Pepsi is fucking crack in a can. I'm cool with that. Sometimes people try crack. Don't try crack, but I'm just saying.
Right? Don't try crack, ladies and gentlemen.
I think that there is true value in expanding your palate beyond, especially if you have exposure and access and means to drink some of the best wines in the world. I'm not telling you to stray away from that, but I'm telling you that with that access and that privilege, you have warranted or unwarranted earned the right to be an ambassador to people and to understand, like, I am transparent. Listen to me. 10 years ago, if I walked in with a freaking 1.5 liter bottle of Yellowtail Shiraz, you can tell me shit.
That's what you were doing it.
I was doing it. Damn that. I tried Yellowtail Shiraz the other day for shits and giggles and I almost threw up.
How'd it go?
I almost threw up. It was terrible. But started from the bottom, now we're here, right?
And
so I think that the more you know about wine, there's an inherent responsibility to not be a fucking douchebag about it. Like, understand that everyone is not drinking the shit that you're drinking. But also, I'm also not drinking Sweet Red Bitch or Apothic Red. I'm not mad at you.
So you have limits.
Oh, there's limits to the struggle I'm willing to engage in, right? Like, I have boundaries, healthy boundaries. There's some shit where I'm like, listen, sis, you like it, I love it. I'm not drinking it, but you like it, I love it. I have no argument with you. If that's what you enjoy drinking, cool.
That's their starting point. I think we also have to allow consumers somewhere to start.
You have to. I'm Caribbean. Yeah. I didn't grow up with rye.
Right.
Rum, yes. Rum. But wine is a totally different thing. That's something that I came to. I was privileged enough to go to NYU. Like, I was talking with a friend the other day. The other day, I went to Balthazar with another friend. But that is the first fine dining restaurant I ever went to. And I went there with my friend when we were 23 years old.
Wait,
we
you started at Balthazar?
I did. That was my first fine dining. But let me tell you about the poverty struggle, right? I think I asked for the Bujalas, right? Because I ain't know how to say fucking Beaujolais at all. But I looked for the cheapest shit on the menu. We had snails. We had pate. We were at the height of excellence. But we also had a $12 carafe of wine. Don't ask me what the fuck was in the glass. It was what it was, right? And then we worked harder. We got a lot more coin. Okay. So maybe this time we can afford it. That is the progression of life. I am a certain age, like the Sex in the City, all the places the Sex. I remember my first time at Brasserie 8.5 was based on the women from Sex. I ordered a Cosmo. I don't know what the fuck is in a Cosmo, but I ordered it because Samantha loved that shit. My last name is Jones. She was goals, and that's what my life was. And I'm not ashamed of that. And I feel like we need to encourage people to be like, listen, 100%. Drink where you are. But if you find find somebody that you relate to, trust them, and try it. Yeah. And I think 100%. That both of your wines, listen, y'all need to get this Blanc. Like, don't ask me no questions about it. Just order it.
It's funny because I saw Julia and those guys at the Salamander, and they all were like, oh. And it's good. You know what's rewarding is to see that reaction from all of you guys. Because in the beginning, I know there were some struggles and some like, oh, it could be a little bit better. We're not sure. Who the hell is this guy? And now it's like, oh, you know, the wine is good. And that's the ultimate goal for us. We can make money. I can make money selling anything. But to make quality wine that's respected by all of you guys, it's amazing. It's a great feeling.
It's amazing wine. I am very sad that I missed the Salamander. I will definitely be there next year.
Yes.
This time I had to put family first. There was just some things personally that I did not attend to, but I loved watching everyone there. I was like, oh, I'm not there. I'm sad. Like, I'm like, Kwame's making lamb ribs. There's a fucking jerk.
Yeah, pit. Yeah. I mean, they were digging up the backyard with barbecue. I was like, what is going on? It's fantastic.
That's my kind of carrying on. If that ain't the most blackety black shit ever, like, we just at a luxury resort, electric sliding, eating ribs and shit. Like, that's my kind of carrying on as well.
Yeah, it was pretty good.
Hey, Saw TV, just note that y'all are sponsoring me to go next year.
Yep.
We'll be there next year. So I could literally talk to Danae for the rest of the day, but we both value our time. So now we're going to move into sort of the speed round of this. This is always fun. You cannot overthink these questions. You just have to give me the answer that comes to your head first. All right, you ready?
Yep.
All right, you've tasted enough wines now. There is a grape that you would be completely unbothered if you never had wine made from that grape again. What is it?
Chardonnay.
You got to stop your shit right now. I will end this podcast now. You are giving up all champagne. You got to stop your shit. No, I won't accept that answer from you.
Listen,
absolutely not.
Listen, I can do a Blanc de Noir. We don't need to all the other stuff.
You are going to throw away we'll revisit that. Okay.
Okay, I won't do that. That's a little aggressive. Fine.
You know no you don't mean that. Maybe you're throwing away California Chardonnay.
There you go. California Chardonnay. We're in there.
Fair. I'll accept that. There's good California Chardonnay, but I'll accept that. All right. The day goes phenomenally well.
Mm-hmm.
Everything that could have possibly gone right in that day has gone right. What do you drink?
First, I want to have a glass of Lafite always to celebrate. Lafite is the new champagne. We're taking over the celebratory moments. I know you're a champagne girl and I'm a champagne guy based upon work experience, but rosé to celebrate is not bad at all. It gets a good
not
reaction.
Bad.
And then I'm from there, I'll probably have a mezcal margarita.
Mmm. My kind of carrying on, considering I'm from Central America, from a town that borders Mexico. Okay, reverse that. The day is complete shit. You're literally looking up for the cameras that are filming your life. You think you're on an episode of The Truman Show. Everything that could have possibly gone wrong has gone wrong. Then what do you drink?
Oh, man, that's not, I really do break open a bottle of champagne. I'm a champagne guy. Like, so I'll just have a glass of three or four, and I'm like, fuck it. Because it does make you feel a certain way. Like, you know, it's like, oh.
The same is true. A Magnum is enough for two people if one person isn't drinking. Absolutely true.
Right.
Absolutely true. Okay, grape or region or producer,
mm-hmm.
aside from Lafite. Like, we're going to just accept that Lafite is the thing. People might not be onto yet, but they need to try.
Ooh, that is a good question. Oh, I had many, many years ago, because I'm a champagne fan, there was a Pinot Meunier from Chandon that was outstanding.
Ooh.
Outstanding. And they don't really make enough of it for it to be like a commercial success and people be aware, but it's the third champagne grape. And I fell in love with that. Big body, huge wine, but it's like my favorite for sure. So any Pinot Meunier you can get, it could be good.
Le Hurt Fair, we have featured it on Sound TV. I am a fan of Meunier magic. I feel like Meunier, like if we were to categorize it, like if you know this Silk Sonic show, like, oh, you got plans, cancel that. Like, I feel like that's what people do with Meunier. Y'all are wrong. Okay. Y'all need to cancel Pinot Noir sometimes and go with the Meunier magic.
Exactly.
Because y'all be...
I'm with you on that.
Like, I love Pinot Noir, but the way y'all sweat it is ridiculous.
Yeah.
Y'all got to get
I'm
on some Meunier.
I'm taking Meunier over Noir.
I like the power in Meunier, too. I'm here for it.
Yeah.
So before we wrap up, if y'all are not following Danae yet, Danae, please tell people where they can follow you and Lafite.
My personal Instagram is at Thurston Burstin the Third. I thought I was Thurston Howell growing up, so my friends gave me that nickname. And and at Lafite Rosé is the personal handle for Lafite. At L-A-F-E-T-E-R-O-S-E.
Boom. So no note, by the time that y'all listen to this episode, La Fête du Blanc will be available.
Might be gone.
Y'all might not even get it. Real talk, I got to secure my bottles as soon as we stop recording. I'm going to talk to Danae after this. I think that we should do like a live tasting of this.
Oh, let's go.
We should have people jump in and join this because I think this is fucking phenomenal. I have told y'all how great the Vermentino grape is, even though Italy is probably the wine region that I have. Parentage, lineage, DNA. So, you know, France renames everything. I low-key love the arrogance of the French. Like, ah, fuck that name. We're going to use this one.
They told me well.
Listen, I'm also here for it. Right? I'm very French in a lot of ways. But I think that we're going to do this and we'll invite you guys to join in with us and taste and talk about it. I want to thank Danae so much. This has been such an incredible conversation. This is the level of authenticity and realness that I challenge everybody to embrace. When we say that wine is for everyone, it truly is. And it's just how you choose to experience it. And you are inspiring me and an entire other generation of wine consumers, wine enthusiasts, wine drinkers, wine media to push the envelope.
And don't make me cry.
Listen, if we gonna rebel, we gonna rebel, honey. My mother often says, thank God you weren't born in the civil rights because I think I would have lost my child. So I am here for it. I want to thank my guest, Danae, for joining us. You guys know how to follow him. And thank you guys for listening.
Thank you so much.
Until next week. Peace. Oh my goodness, guys, thank you so much for listening to this week's episode. We are offering a special gift to all of my amazing listeners. If you haven't subscribed yet, head on over to SomTV.com. Right now, if you enter the code Shakira, S-H-A-K-E-R-A, you will get 50% off your annual membership. And so that makes sure you don't miss any of the amazing content, including a couple things that feature me on SomTV. Head on over to SomTV.com, use code Shakira, and sign up for your yearly subscription now.